This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Yeah, he hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Another late night here. Father said that boy's not near. He doesn't know that I'm not far away. Doesn't want you coming around. Says you ought to leave this town. That is just not possible today. That is just what all good fathers say.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, everyone. Coming to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, where the air outside grows warm and humid, but inside the confines here, it is cool and sparkling with electric creativity, as always. Thanks for joining us here on the podcast, everyone. Listening to us all over the state, all over the country, all the ships at sea. Casting, one, two, three. Well, it's my pleasure here to be with you today, folks. I want to start here with the news, ladies and gentlemen. The news of the day. Have you heard this? It comes to us from our old friend Prince. You know of whom I speak, the diminutive Minnesota rocker. Oh, he just tore up the Super Bowl a few years ago. Remember that? Fantastic. Who's not a fan of Prince? I sure am. Maybe we'll do a little Prince stuff in the vault one of these days. Talk about some of his work. But man, the headlines are blaring today, man. Prince declares he's taking his website down. He's taking his website down. He's not going to have any downloads available anywhere in the world. You can only get his new album, folks, on CD. Have you heard of these things? Compact discs. And he says boldly and, you know, definitively, the internet is completely over. The internet is over. It's just like, as he said in the, and I'm paraphrasing here, talking to the Daily Mirror magazine paper, that the internet is over. It's kind of like MTV, he says. It was hot. It was hip for a little while. But now it's just so finished. My eyes lit up when I saw it. I was just like, this is made for the podcast. Talk about a topic that we love talking about here and hearing from you guys. All your emails out there. Thanks for sending them in. So much feedback from the last couple of weeks. Thanks for encouraging me on my solo run last week. I'm solo here as well. Kurt South is on vacation somewhere in Virginia, hunting for roots in the woods, living on leaves and wild boar, or something like that. I don't know. He called me last week. So, man, Prince, the internet is over, he says. That's not good news for me. You know, our friend Bob Lefsetz points out that it just shows how out of touch you are, these older guys. You know, Prince is going to release his new album, get this, in a CD that's given away free with a newspaper. Like you get, I can't remember what newspaper it was, the Times or the London Times, the whatever, I don't know. So you get a newspaper, a daily paper, and it's got Prince's free album in there. a dying musical format wrapped up in a dying medium. I mean, there's not a lot of innovation there. Not a lot of innovation. But I couldn't help but be somewhat, oh, let the emails rain down. Let them rain down upon me, Phil at philpritchard.com. I had the little thought that Prince may be on to something here. Now, I'm not saying the internet is over. I think that is laughable nonsense. Any one of you would probably agree. That's like saying cell phones are done. If we're all going back to rotary phones. This is a fad. You know, or, you know, cable TV has finally run its course. Or, you know, just it's just... He's talking about the medium of the internet, like it's only about music or something. But he did kind of say that, you know, he said, man, it's just all this digital information. It just fills your head with all these numbers and statistics, and it's just not good for anybody. And, man, there's something to what he's saying there, I think, that deserves a little merit. And some frantic discussion from some of you out there. Phil@philpritchard.com. Send it to me. Man, and I've complained about this time and again on the show. You know, as we've all got websites, we've all got a Facebook page, what, Twitter, and man, there is so much out there. You can just beat people down with your presence online. I get beaten mercilessly daily, as you do. You just get spammed. You add some guy on Facebook. I think I know this guy. You add him, and the next thing you know, man, you're getting, you know, invites, you know, to all of his gigs, and just then you're just sorry you even did it, and you got to manage this. You have to delete the message or get rid of him as a friend, and it's a constant battle, you know. And the music is just where's the music? I don't know. Not that I even want to hear his music. I don't need any more new music. I got 1,000 vinyl records over there. I can't even listen to all at once. My iTunes is just voluminous. It's overwhelming. I don't even know what I want to listen to. The patron saint of the full band, Kevin Haggard, has a hard drive somewhere with I can't remember what it was, something like 30,000 albums on it. It's something like that. Like, he could listen to it for 75 years constantly and never listen to the same song twice. Something just insane like that. I'll have to have Haggard send me the exact quote on that. How many songs, how many hours of music without playing the same song twice. And, yeah, that becomes a problem. It's so easy to get music and buy it and put it in, store it. But then it just comes what do I even want to listen to? I sit here and scroll through my iPod. You know, at home, I just got jacked into the stereo. And I'm like, what do I even want to listen to? What is this, you know? And so I hit shuffle and just, you know, some old song comes up I've heard a million times. I skip it. And some B-side, oh, this is garbage. And I just do. It's tough, man, and I think that's maybe Prince's point. Prince was used to that day in MTV where there's maybe a handful of videos on MTV, a handful of songs on TV, on the radio, relative to now. And you could get some attention, and you could sell things. And those days are done, man, and it's just so easy to manipulate those numbers. Our friend Seth Godin wrote a great blog earlier today or last night, came out about payola, you know, pay the old method of paying the radio DJ to play your song. You know, you would say, hey man, get this on the radio, we'll give you $1,000 and a bag of weed or something, you know, whatever, to get on the radio, because, you know, whatever was on the radio is what people bought in the stores, and what people bought in the stores or what they're hearing on the radio. It all worked, man. If we can just get some airplay, then the business, you know, will start rolling downhill. And that was certainly the case. People would listen to their favorite radio stations, and that went on MTV. It went on everywhere. And so the Billboard chart would be full with people who were just paying to be played, but that would still work in a way. And Seth Godin was talking about, he writes books and things, you know, on his marketing ideas. He was talking about the New York Times bestseller list, that is also very easily manipulated. There are firms out there that you can pay that will buy a big chunk of books at the right store on the right day, and hey, that'll get us into the top 50 or whatever, just to try and make a splash and get some interest in the product. And certainly in our Texas music universe, that's certainly the case. There's a lot of people out there who quote-unquote promote albums, songs to radio. I'm not saying that's pale in the old school illegal sense, but it's, you're certainly paying someone to fluff up some statistics. You know, hey, we got these ads, we're on these stations, you know, doing favors. You know, you don't want just anybody pushing your song to the radio, right? You want the guy who's also pushing maybe another big artist, you know. Hey, man, I'm pushing the new, you know, the new Stoney single, man. So you want to be in with that guy because they're going to play this this guy's stuff, and they're also going to play us. And, hey, man, he got this single out there. And Seth goes on to make the point that, you know, these charts and these lists are just so subject to corruption and payola and all that, that you just have to be suspicious. And then further down the chain, just think like social networking, blogs, you know, people, you know, paying for, you know, placement on Google searches, got all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's bands that I meet that open for us, you know, and I'll go to check out their deal. I said, man, we're just starting. We've played one gig. Phil, we're opening for you. It's our second show. We're real excited. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I'll go online, some young guy, and yeah, they've got like 44,000 friends on Facebook or so, you know. And I'm just like, what the heck? You know, how is this happening? And of course, you just don't believe it. And there's nothing behind it. They haven't put out an album or anything. And but someone in there is, you know, savvy and tech savvy and has been you know, hitting the bricks in the social networking world. And so to that end, I think Prince has somewhat of a point. I don't know if that was the point he was trying to make, but that was the one thing I could glean from what he was saying that might have some merit. That, all the digital statistics, man, just this guy's got this much, and there's this many plays and spins, and he's got this many friends, and he's always updating, and he's got this many people following him on Twitter and stuff, and it's just mind-numbing. But, you know, you wonder if that'll change anytime soon. You know, Seth Godin says that there's an emerging market. There's something for all you fans out there looking for the job. Maybe you're unemployed in the tough economy out there, the recession. There is an opening out there for someone to man some filters of information. Google was that, you know, when you're doing search engines, you do get kind of some better results, you know, when you search on Google, than you used to. You know, years ago, you would just get all this random stuff. If you searched Phil Pritchett, you might get. There's no telling what would pop up. But now it gets categorized. It gets, you know, you get the right sites at the top. But, you know, someone who can filter information, filter music, filter networking sites, just to say, well, you know, this many. People are legitimate followers, or I don't know, ways you can see. There's so much transparency online, but someone who can organize that information. And there are some things out there, like, you know, Google and some other things you can that sort of channel that. But to someone like you and me, right? Someone who likes music, well, hey, you know, I'd like to hear some cool new stuff from somebody, but we don't even know where to look, man. I mean, you know, what are you gonna look at the iTunes top 10 and just look at all the American Idol songs? You're like, well, I'm not interested in any of this stuff. Or, you know, walk into a record store, oh, you know, here's our best sellers, or here's something cool, according to the desk guy. But if you know that desk guy, that guy's a filter. He's a guy that listens to everything and can say, hey, man, this is something I really dig, and I know you, and I think you'd like it. But we need something more. We need more things like that in the world, man, in the online world, in the virtual world. Filters, man, trusted voices. You know, these old guys like Dick Clark and Casey Kasem and, MTV. And you know, these guys would play. Now, maybe they were getting payola'd out the wazoo. But man, what they were playing was something they liked, or you at least trusted them. There was some trust there. And you'd be listening to, a well-known DJ or something, and say, man, this guy gets sent everything. He hears everybody's case of why he needs to play it. And then he plays certain songs for certain reasons, and, you know, we can choose to pay attention or not. So filters, man, online filters. Man, someone would have to really come up with a good programming scheme. I don't even know in what sense. You know, right now you can just only go to, like, people's Amazon page of what they like, or, you know, it's random. It's all floating out there. There's got to be better ways of getting that information together. But one thing's for sure. If you do type in that stuff, Prince will not show up. His website, no downloads available. Selling those CDs, man. I'm telling you what, Prince, those CDs are going to change the world, man. Change the world. That and the newspaper that they're wrapped in. Well, coming up here in our next segment, I got a good email from our good friend in the Midwest, Eric Albers. Thanks, Eric. Haven't heard from you in a while. But he brings up the issue, the topic of showmanship. And he referred to some of my antics on stage, that I implore to my own amusement, hopefully to the amusement of those at the show. And showmanship, Pink Floyd's Lasers and the Flying Pig and all that kind of cool stuff. But then you go see some of your favorite bands and they stand there and stare at their shoes. Is that okay? Of course. I mean, some of us don't mind. We all love the great show. But where do you draw the line? Where do you kind of go, man, this is just, you're swinging from ropes, riding the bull on stage. This is corny. But Queen, you know, Freddie Mercury with the crown and the robe, strutting around the stage, you know, just singing We Are the Champions. That's great stuff. David Bowie. But then some of these other guys, it's too much or something. So we're going to explore, for your listening pleasure on the P2 Podcast, the issue of showmanship. I'll try to give some insight into what I think about on stage and what I've gleaned from some of my friends over the years. The topic of putting on a show. Who's good at it, and where do we draw the line in our next segment next?
But you won't forget me. You won't forget me now. Get someone on the highway and never go for that way. Don't come down the money sometimes. And everyone but the heart that got missing that all. On the lonely, lonely, lonely ride. And I'm alone if I don't die.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Thanks for joining us, everybody, for this week's edition of the podcast. Talking about music, talking about Prince. The internet is completely over, he says. I love how he says completely. Like, not just a little bit. It's completely over. It's done. It's a fad. It's finished. Laughable stuff from our man up there. Oh, but he's got good stuff, though. Talented. And a showman. We're going to talk about showmanship here in this segment. Did you know, speaking of digital music, did you know you could get every song I ever wrote, which is, I don't know, recorded, for $20? The drop card, folks. Go to, philpritchard.com. Hit the little merch thing, P2 merch over there. Order the drop card. It's just $20. I will personally send you, it's like a little credit card with my picture and name on it. It says P2, the full catalog on it. The full catalog. I'll shoot it to you. And then, man, you type in the code on the back. It tells you, it has little simple directions on the back. Download every album that we've ever made. Me and the full band. I don't know how many it is. 11, 12, something like that. Enjoy. We want you to have it all. And, man, you're not going to get that kind of deal from Prince, man. You're going to have to go out there and buy those CDs. $18.99 a piece. I don't know what he charges for them. The old stuff. But it's out there, so take advantage of that. Man, oh man, where are we on showmanship? Where are we on showmanship? This is a good jumping off point for our old friend Prince. A showman, man, a big time showman. He sings, he dances, he plays the guitar, he swings on ropes, whatever. Has a light show. Great stuff, man, great stuff. But Eric brought up an interesting point. He was asking me about some of my showmanship influences. Last week, sitting in this very chair, in this very room, I talked about the best show I'd ever seen in my life. Neil Finn in a very simple, understated acoustic show at La Zona Rosa in Austin, Texas. Mid-90s, I guess, 96 or something like that. Just fantastic. I talked about how I went to the show alone, and he came out and just mesmerized everybody for 2.5 hours. with all of his great songs and funny anecdotes and things like that. That's a perfect form of showmanship. You know, he's on stage, he's putting on a show, but it's in a subdued environment. Subdued environment. We all love going to see the big show, man, in the big arena. And there's tremendous pressure on those acts, aren't they? Can you imagine? I mean, I roll in with a Stu and Blue. God bless them. The full band. We just roll out there. We do our thing. Can you imagine, though, if you've sold out, if you knew that, you know, Jerry World up there in Arlington, here in Arlington's sold out, and, man, all right, we got to roll in there and make everybody feel like they got their money's worth. I mean, I couldn't imagine that. I mean, just the screens, the lights, the dancers. What would you do, you know? I mean, could Neil Finn walk out there or myself with my trusty acoustic guitar and just mesmerize a crowd of 85,000 people? So a lot of pressure there. I mean, the Stones or U2, I mean, it's just comical how these guys try to top themselves with each successive tour in the showmanship category. Yes, we love to say it's all about the music, it's all about the music. But the fact is they don't go on stage in those arenas and just sit on a stool and say, hey, man, I'm just going to play my music. That's why you're here, right? Of course not. We want to watch Bono strut on a catwalk that reaches into the upper sections. We want to see a revolving drum kit stage. We want to see dancers. We want to see fire, pyrotechnics, lasers. Or do we? I don't know. But that's what they're doing. That's what they think they need to do. And if they're charging those kinds of ticket prices, man, maybe they feel like they've got to bring a circus out there. As far as myself, man, at a young age, and email me, let me know what you've seen out there in the showmanship category. But yeah, I would get a little bored, especially if it was a band that I didn't know their music that well. If it was someone like, man, let's go see this band play, whatever, I'd say, okay. And I'd go, and if I didn't know all their songs, if they just came out there and stood there and played their songs, much to the joy of those who knew their songs already, I'm sure, you know, I would be a little disengaged from it. And I'm not talking about doing backflips and things, but talking to the crowd, you know, being funny, giving some insight into what they're doing. That's all showmanship. But if the band was kind of a brooding rock act or some sort of, you know, distant songwriter type, and I didn't know his stuff, and he's just standing there playing song after song after song, I'm going to start looking at my watch a little bit. So that, I think I did more than I'd maybe care to admit. I'd love to say it's all about the music, man, all the time. But if it was someone I didn't know very well, you know, hey, man, get out there and give me a little something. Keep me entertained. Keep me listening. Make me laugh between songs. Something. You know, I talk a lot about David Garza, who I got to play with at the Granada Theater. My old hero, man, even though he's about my age, man. He was one of the young guy, you know, my age that was playing, and man, he was just joking around with the band. He'd go back and play the bongos, and he'd pull some fan on stage to play his guitar, and everybody'd be laughing. And it was like a night at summer camp. It was just fantastic. His whole showmanship aspect was mesmerizing, and that's what I based, you know, really my career on, were guys like him who could engage a little bit. And certainly, you know, the Texas country dudes like Keen, you know, you had all these songwriter troubadour guys, and they all had grisly old stories, but there was something really fresh in Keen's approach, man, like on that very first live record he did at Sons of Herman Hall that we all had and listened to a billion times. Just all those anecdotes about, you know, the front porch and all that kind of stuff, man, that's great, great showmanship. I mean, he's not lighting anything on fire. You know, sort of the folk songwriter country tradition, you know, sharing the stories, putting it in the song. You know, Todd Snyder's certainly a master at that. Guys like that. So there's a big difference between that and kind of the stadium show where you get these rock, get the lasers and all that. You can certainly be a great showman in both arenas. By the same token, you can be a bad showman, I think, in any arena too. If it's a small, intimate performance and they just sit there on a stool and strum away song after song, I'm looking at my watch. Gosh, one of the worst shows I ever saw, and let me apologize to those of you out there in the Midwest, our fans out there, man, Little Johnny Cougar Mellencamp, the surly, pugilistic man out there, so many hits, so many great songs. I was excited to go see him. I had a free ticket in Austin. I don't know. It was right after he had one of those heart attacks. I don't know. This was, I guess, late 90s maybe or something like that. Had a ticket, went and saw Mellencamp, and, man, he looked so incredibly bored up there. I mean, he was just, like, sitting on the drum riser smoking a cigarette while the band was playing, you know, Little Pink Houses for You and Me. He just kind of had his mic held up for the crowd to sing. He never once said, hey, it's great to be in Austin, or, you know, hey, that was great, or good night. He just did like an hour and 10 minutes and left. And that was a big arena thing, you know, and there were lights flashing and, you know, there was people on the stage dancing around. But it was just so unengaging and unentertaining for me. Outside of the songs, I was just like, golly, man, where was the show, man? He just, so maybe that's all showmanship is showing interest, showing an awareness, you know, to showing that you're cognizant of what town you're in, of what night it's, you are, because it is about being in the moment, maybe. Now, as I'm just sitting here talking about it, this is what is occurring to me. You've got to give the audience the sense that tonight is the end of all nights. It's the last night on earth, a night unlike any that's come before or any come since. You may have seen me play in another market years ago, and you might see me a few years from now or next week, but tonight is just tonight. And so the more you can joke about or draw in the audience, talk about where they live or the last time you were there or some guy sitting in the front row, some shirt he's wearing, and you make it all about that night, I think that's what really me as a fan is looking for is, man, he was just aware. Like Neil Finn was just, he told all these funny stories about Austin and, you know, I was eating at Guero's down here. You know, I love going there when I'm in town. And, you know, we all eat at Guero's. I'm like, oh, man, he goes to Guero's. Cool. Hey, yeah, he's talking about those funny sinks out in front of the bathroom in the middle of the floor. There's kind of these weird setup at some of these restaurants. And it was something living in that town you could relate to. And that's part of it, man. I think that's where some of these Rolling Stones shows lose that. I've seen the Stones several times, and I've seen their recent DVDs. And you do feel like it's just, man, they do this exact same show every night. I know on a couple tours they haven't done that. They did the theater tour with the Bridges of Babylon or whatever. And they mix it up. But you do sense maybe that Mick, he's just going through the motions, man. He struts to this side. He wags his finger. He struts to the other side. He wags the finger. You know, they start up, you know, Honky Tonk Woman. They start up Sympathy for the Devil. And here they come, man. And they're delivering what people want. But the lights are going. But you maybe don't get the sense that Mick knows that he's in Memphis, Tennessee tonight. You know, what a great... He might say one thing about it or something. But I think that maybe these guys get away from that the older they get and the bigger these shows get. It's about creating that one-night appeal, man, that's unlike any other night. I think that's at the heart of showmanship. It's not so much that, you know, hey, man, he plays the guitar behind his head and he does backflips and stuff, but he does that in every town, right? You know, we saw Pink Floyd and the Lasers and the Pig and all that, and it was great, but you could see the same exact thing in the same exact order the next night in New York or wherever. I was always intrigued by those big tours or shows of bands that I followed where I read in astonishment that, man, the set list was completely different the next night in Cleveland. He played all acoustic, or he played his entire new record, or he didn't play any of the new record the next night. He just played all of his hits, and then he had a different band, you know, different. Some guys were joining him on this leg of the tour, and you want to think that the artist, the entertainer, is, man, each town, each night calls for a different set of circumstances. You know, hey, this night is a Saturday night. Everybody's been drinking. It's late. The place is sold out. Man, that requires a certain amount of awareness on the part of the artist, on the part of me, I would say, when I go on stage. And then some nights you're playing in a coffee shop on a Tuesday afternoon, and there's three people in there. Well, that kind of calls for a different set of circumstances. And I don't know if y'all have noticed out that y'all might have an old set list from the band, but we haven't made set lists in years in the Phil Pritchett and the Full Band shows. I never have a set list. As I always tell the band, I say, man, I'm kind of like Peyton Manning out there. You know, of course, Indianapolis Colts quarterback who calls his own plays from the line of scrimmage by reading the defense. I go, man, that's kind of how you have to be, in my opinion. and what works good for our band is just you got to see how things are developing. You know, we're going on stage. We know all the songs. It doesn't matter what order we play them in or what we play or what we leave out. And there's stuff we always want to play at every show. But there's stuff we can include if we feel like it. But I think that all goes toward the effort to make people feel like it's a unique show. And you've got to be really aware, hey, is it about to rain? We're outside. It's about to rain. And there's some loud guys down front. We got to do something about that. We got to do this. We got to do that. People are leaving. It's getting late. Or, man, hey, man, a ton more people showed up at midnight halfway through our show who didn't get out from this other thing. So you turn around to Stu and Blue, and you give them the hand signals. Call the audible. Call the audible. Let's jump in. Let's go do some of the old ones, you know. And that's how I like to run a show. And I think a lot of really good showmen do that as well. Things that spring to mind, man, are one of the best shows I ever saw was David Bowie at the old Starplex, the Smirnoff, whatever it's called there in Dallas. Sat in the middle of the shed there, big outdoor kind of place, partially covered. And I had Bowie's greatest hits. I don't know. I didn't know a whole lot about David Bowie. I just knew he had some cool, weird stuff. And man, oh man, what a show. What just a visual conception this guy has. A sense of the theatrical. Yes, it's staged. Yes, it's maybe the same in every town every night. But he was funny between songs. He did talk about Dallas and things throughout the set. And man, he opens with the acoustic guitar, man. Just come on. Space Odyssey, just Ground Control to Major Tom. Ground Control to Major Tom. So we're out there. The lights are down. Bowie walks out on stage, you know, in his white suit with his acoustic. And he's over on the left-hand side of the stage. And the whole stage is black. The curtain is up, but it's black. You can't see anything behind him, really. And you realize there's a very thin screen from way up in the rafters all the way down to the floor of the stage right behind Bowie, standing right in front of this gigantic, it's like a movie screen, but it's kind of see-through. And he starts singing, you know, Space Oddity. This is Ground Control to Major Tom. Email me, I'll treat you to my version sometime. Then, all of a sudden, a gigantic David Bowie walks out on the stage from the right. This is Bowie's image wearing the exact same clothes. There's a movie projector out in the audience that's shooting this image up on the screen. But it looks like he's walking on the stage. You follow me? So you got little Bowie down here on the left, and then gigantic David Bowie smoking a cigarette. He just kind of walks out onto the stage, and the crowd just goes crazy. Just wow, wow, you know. And while Bowie's playing down here on the left, he's just singing his song. Big, huge David Bowie is just sitting there smoking a cigarette, looking at the crowd, just like he's standing on the stage. And then, all of a sudden, you see the big Bowie kind of glance down low to his right, and he's staring right at the live David Bowie. And he kneels down, and he's perched, you know, just looking down at himself singing, the huge Bowie, looking at the little real Bowie. It's confusing. And then, all of a sudden, during the chorus, the big Bowie turns his head to the crowd and starts singing perfectly in sync with the song. He's moving his mouth. Just, this is Ground Control to Major Tom. You've written. And everyone in the crowd is just freaking out. It's all synced up. You dig? So, I mean, it's little Bowie there playing. It's just acoustic. There's no band. And the big Bowie just sitting there singing right with him. And they're looking at each other. Then the real Bowie glances up like he's looking at the big Bowie, you know, and they're just sitting there just singing this song together. Wild. I've never seen anything like it before or since. It was fantastic. And then in the middle of the part, the middle of it, the big Bowie starts spinning around. And then he's upside down. He starts floating around on the stage, on the screen. Just here, sitting in my tin can, far, far away. That was some showmanship, man. So put that down. Greatness there. Also, if you want to see some great showmanship, man, Live Aid. What is that? Live Aid. Trying to feed Africa, man. 1985, was it? Oh, man, Zeppelin was there. Everybody was there. Reunion Zeppelin. But, man, oh, man, it's one of the greatest stories of all time in stadium rock showmanship history. Queen. It was in Wembley Stadium, wasn't it? In England, in London. And Queen comes out on stage. And the crowd just goes nuts, man. It's their home, you know, British band. And do they proceed to just rip the freaking roof off the place? You can go on YouTube and watch Queen's performance. And it's a little dated, and it's 80s and all that. But, man, Mercury's out front, man, strutting around, Brian May on guitar, and they've got the crowd just singing those songs, man, those anthems of humanity. You know, just we are the champions. I can't remember if they did that. Of course they did that. But, man, it's just fantastic. Fantastic. And that was all those old rock dudes who were at that show just said, man, Queen blew everyone off the stage. One of the greatest shows in the circumstances, in the moment, that anybody had ever seen. It's only like 17 minutes long. You watch the whole thing on YouTube, I'm pretty sure. So check that out, man. Queen at Live Aid, a legendary set, man, turned in there by a great showmanship band. And our old friend Bowie, man, good stuff. And Prince, despite the internet being completely over, you're still a great showman. So put that in your hat, my friend. Well, in the vault, we're going to get into one of my favorite bands. They've kind of fallen by the wayside of recent years. R.E.M., oh, Pritchett loves him some R.E.M. Next.
Change the difference between what you want and what you need. There's a key, your adventure for today. What do you do between the horns of the
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Thrilled that you are joining us on one of our many outlets there, man. Radio stations, internet stations, of course, philpritchett.com. Subscribe to it on iTunes, the podcast. Show people that you're in the know. Pat yourself on the back that you're a little bit smarter than that guy sitting next to you in line or at the basketball game or at the movie. Just think, man, I'm in the know. The P2 Podcast, friends. So glad you could join us here. Talking about showmanship in our last segment. Man, let's just wrap that up by saying, you got to make it all about that one night if you're on stage. Make it about the one night. I hear bands all the time go, man, we just want to be consistent. We do a better show if we know exactly what's coming, you know, because we can set all the lights and the click tracks and all that. Man, I've just never been a believer in that. I think that takes away from the moment. You're reading charts and listening to clicks in your head and, come on. You got to be lost in the moment. You're in this club. You're in this bar. You're at this festival. You need to talk about the trees you see and the people and the whatever's happening. There's a fight up front or there's a baby crying. Man, you got to be on that, man. You got to be on that. You got to make that part of the show. Make that part of the uniqueness. That's what we're looking for as fans, aren't we, out there in the crowd? We starve for it. We crave it. Give it to us, I say. I'll keep trying to do my best out there for you folks. Let me know if I am. Phil at philpritchett.com. Well. In the 80s, man, being young, if you wanted to be cool, you had to love you some R.E.M. Now, hold on. I know what you're all thinking. Michael Stipe and his bald head beating you up and down about being a vegan and all that. Well, gee whiz, what an ass-whipping. But, dude, let me just tell you this. Early R.E.M. through about the first 5 or 6 records, man, was some of the best southern drunk artistic rock and roll you could find anywhere. Anywhere. Athens, Georgia, man. What a rock and roll town that is. They come out of Athens, 1980. They make Murmur. Just the weirdest mumbling rockinest album you've ever heard. We're talking about today, Life's Rich Pageant, which is one of my favorite albums of all time. Life's Rich Pageant. Oh, man, we used to play this first song off this record, Begin the Begin. Has that great little lick. We used to open our little, my high school band, All in One, and our band, The Suburbans. We used to play Begin the Begin. This is how the album kicks off. Begin the Begin, Life's Rich Pageant, REM. Check it out. Crazy, man. So crazy. You look at those. There's great old footage of REM, like on Letterman. Go back and watch him play, South Central Rain and stuff. They were on Letterman a lot back when he was, on the old show, the Late, Late, Late Show on NBC, where Michael Stipe had long curly hair down his face. But, man, Peter Buck, Rickenbacker, played lead guitar. He's always jumping up in the air and doing splits. He wore like a vest. And, man, they were an interesting band, dude. They were very Southern, very Georgia, Athens, but very artistic, very strange, very mysterious, and weird lyrics, weird, a lot of mystique around REM. There wasn't a lot of pictures of them on their first records. And you went and saw them live, man, it was just this rock and roll bombast, weird lyrics, but fast, and they were known for being just a great live band, a lot of spirited artistry on stage, fist fights backstage. They didn't get along sometimes, but they stuck together for a long time. And I feel like I loved Out of Time and Automatic for the People, which came out early 90s, REM, but they really went huge, man, with Warner Brothers, had a big deal. And as much as Michael Stipe, when he shaved his head or lost all his hair, whichever one, they jumped the shark for me a little bit. I just, because he was always on talk. He started showing up everywhere, And all of a sudden, everyone knew what he looked like. Everyone knew his politics. It's the same thing we complain about. He was out there just exerting his influence on the world. And I think it turned people off, man. I liked him better when I didn't even know what they looked like. And they, you know, I just see some weird poster on some dude's wall that just said REM. I was like, dude, that's cool. Then I hear this weird rocking music. And, but they also had great slow stuff, man. Check this out. This is also from Life's Rich Pageant. Fall on Me, man. What a great song. Check it out. REM, Fall on Me. Sorry, man. No question about it. Just a beautiful melody. Great chord changes. Love that song. Golly. This song, this album is just chock full, man. Every song's, you know, got a real different flavor to it. There's some weird kind of stuff on there. Underneath the Bunker, I love. Flowers of Guatemala. They always had really weird, great titles. Look at a Pritchett record, man. You'll never see a title that just says, You and Me, On the Road. I like long titles. I like weird descriptive titles. The Bullfighter Returns. I don't know. Stuff like that. I like to go with stuff like that. Man, that's certainly an influence from REM. And, man, just that jangly, rocking stuff, man. Like on Temptations Gate. You heard that? Phil Pritchett and the Full Band, one of our records off of High Tide in the Heartland. Definitely REM influenced, man. We used to cover Radio Free Europe back in the day. What a kick-ass song that is. This is another one off of there, man. This is an album cut. You know, it wasn't a single or anything. It's just a cool song I like. More rock and REM, man. These Days.
Gathered for
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Thank you for being with us this week on the podcast. Phil Pritchett here. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. We want to come play a show for you. I don't care where you are, an apartment on a ranch, Saskatchewan, Mexico City. Call me, man. We'll show up and rock it out. You can afford it. We'll make it work. Or call me, 817-733-5256 to book the band or to come to the studio. God, we got tons of people coming to the studio. We got Seth Jones coming in here. We had Adrian Escovedo in here recording. We have Brian Hunt and his band coming in here. Brian Sachs coming in here. Tons of dudes recording, man. All kinds of stuff going on there. You can too, man. There's all different kinds of ways to do it. We make it fun and affordable. Trinidad. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Well, I'm going to leave you with the last song on Life's Rich Pageant from R.E.M. Come on, man. This is cool stuff, isn't it? Old man, just R.E.M. They're famous for taking the stage just drunk and kicking over their amps and just rocking out. You know, sometimes a show would be like 20 minutes. Sometimes it would be like 3 hours. It just depended on that night, how they were doing. So you had to catch them on the right night, man. R.E.M., this is I Am Superman. We'll see you next week on the podcast. Take care.